Okay, all right. Which one was that?
California Girls.
Oh, California Girls. Yeah. That's right. California Girls.
Wi-Fi
ball.
Who's the main guy? Is it Chip?
I can't.
Eric Estrada.
No, that's Chips.
Oh, okay.
That's Chips. Hawaii 5-0 is the cops in Hawaii.
Yeah, yeah. The main guy who was in that back. In the
I day. Don't remember that. Okay. Yeah, no. Chips was Eric Estrada. Yeah, he was a Latino. Yeah, that was a big deal. That was a big deal back then.
How high the moon.
Well, Larry, thank you very much for opening up the show like nobody's ever opened up the show. I love it.
Thank you.
And now you got to wonder, like you said off mic, what's next?
Yeah, I don't know how to top that one, but it is what it is. No, thank you. This is what, number three with us?
I think it's number three for you. Number exactly. Three. Yeah, you're not part of the five club just yet. Not yet, but no, it's close.
Getting there.
There's a small club. Small club, like I think it's like three or four people have hit the five mark where they've been in here five times, which is great. Mm-hmm. But we'll get you back in here two more times. So you got to figure out, I don't know how you follow up with that, man.
Well, what did I do? I did the xylophone, I did the recorder, and now the trombone. I always find a way to do something.
There's plenty of opportunities. There's other things that we can do. So sure. It's good. It's good to have you back in the studio, man.
Thank you.
Thanks. So we're gonna talk about what you've been up to since, I guess, leaving the pool industry.
Yes.
And leaving the trade. I like evolution. I like seeing tradespeople, you know, build what they built on site and for the industry, and then all of a sudden start coming up with new ideas that are going to be benefiting the industry.
Yes.
And that's where you're headed now with TradeLinks, right?
That's right, TradeLinks. Yeah. And still with the mentorship group as well. So yeah, that's still something I'm very active with. It was the Georgetown Skilled Trades Mentorship Group. Now it's just the Skilled Trades Mentorship Group because we've had so much interest from outside of Georgetown. And I figured to expand the borders. So now I'm working on a project involving the Dufferin Board of Trade and their Dream Career event that's happening in October. So helping them get some more exhibitors to that event, some sponsorships, hopefully. So I'm involved in that. Just got that kicked off recently. So I'm using the contacts through that group and just contacts in general to
Let's start making some noise, man, because I can't stand... You and I talk a lot on DMs, right? And through text messaging and stuff like that. But it's just like I saw a post recently that was shared on LinkedIn about our good old Premier Ford, you know, making a huge announcement about more money being put into more trade programs.
Right.
What I would love to see the media and politicians talk about are the dozens of kids that have gone through these trade programs reaching out to myself and everybody I know looking for work, and there isn't any work there.
Yeah.
So you guys are disconnecting this industry to the point where, fine, spend taxpayers' dollars on creating these programs that are educating people to get into the trade, and then when they try to get into the trade for actual work, they can't find anything. So guess what? They're going to leave.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the other issue that I'm seeing, and I'm running into a lot, and I'm talking to a lot of kids through the group, through the consultancy, at fairs, at schools, still doing a lot of presentations at schools, of all the schools, local schools. A lot of them are coming to me, and the motivations that they have, for example, they're very surface-level motivations to why they're picking that particular trade to begin with. So a lot of it is money-driven. If I look at, say, the posts that I put up, the ones that...
Short-term money-driven?
Well, short term, I guess, in terms of like motivations, like more like surface level motivations. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's so much more that goes into finding a career. And what is driving the bus now are the short term, the surface level, like the extrinsic stuff, like the money aspect. And if I look at the posts I put on my website, the ones that have the most traction and get the most amount of hits are the ones that talk about the highest paid trades, which... I always ask students when I go to these expos and all that, and they say, well, what are you thinking of doing career wise? What are your plans? Oh, I want to get into this trade. Okay, fantastic. You seem pretty confident in your choice. I like seeing that. why is that pushing? Like, why is that the case?
Why are you driven that way? Yeah.
They get paid well. Okay. Others will.
But you got to earn it still.
You do. You do. But the thing is, it's just like there's so much, like, once again, like, and part of my criminology background is looking beyond the stats, looking beyond the numbers, because sure, on paper, like, obviously once you get to that point, exactly like you said, after that 5-year apprenticeship, say if it's for an electrician, that salary data only shows you just a limited piece, right? Like, what about the advancement opportunities that other situations can have? What about the employability aspect? Okay, yeah. What are the trades where you can get off the ground running sooner and quicker? And then, yeah, all of a sudden, that maybe gives you a better pathway to entrepreneurship, for example, which then the income potential is unlimited. So I think the metrics and, like, some of the things that are being used to promote trades is not really as good as it could be. For example, like, a lot of students that are coming to me are once again asked the same question. Oh, I like working with my hands. That's why I want to become an electrician. It's such a multifaceted piece that I think, you know, there's
every trade works with their hands.
There and there you are. Or again, I don't want to be in construction. Okay, well, what does construction mean to you? Right?
You can work in construction by not being in construction, by working in a part of construction that is contributing to construction.
Right.
You know what I mean? So all of a sudden there's other, but nobody's educating them on that.
No, exactly.
That's the issue, right? It kind of reminds me of, what's that scientific curve? The way to 2 points doesn't necessarily a direct line.
Right, right, right.
There's a term. I remember seeing Mythbusters talk about how a ball can travel down, and then they proved that if it was on a curve,
right,
it got there faster than a direct line.
Right.
I bring this up because you got all these kids coming towards you and other people like myself and everybody that's in the industry that's so-called influencing. Mm-hmm. They're like, I want to make a lot of money because that's the one trade that makes a lot of money. Right. But they're not understanding that if you start in this other trade and you pay your dues and earn, you'll actually be making a lot more money in the same time frame that you're making in this trade.
Exactly.
I'm not dismissing that trade that you think off the bat, but no. It reminds me of Mark from Craigmore Construction, where he went online when he was 19 years old, or even I think younger, and he looked at what was missing from the trades, and that's how he chose bricklaying.
Right.
He didn't look at it like which one's making the most money. He was like, where is the biggest opportunity?
That's right.
And then he focused on that, and he's done really well for himself, and he's built a solid business, and he's doing financially well for himself. That's how I think these kids should be looking at it. But we're getting way ahead of ourselves. Larry Lagumba's back here. So we're going to be talking about TradeLinks Consulting. You can find him on www.tradelinksconsulting.ca. Also on IG under @TradeLinksConsulting. And then his email is larry@TradeLinksConsulting.ca. And his phone number is 905-220-3095. I want to do a shout out to Stott HVAC. I've got his hoodie on today. I also want to share, we did a show recently, show number 603 with Joseph de Bruges, the plumber firefighter, plumber, Joe. And I had someone send me out a message and he was like, hey, Manny, I hope all is well. I just finished listening to episode 603 with the plumber firefighter, Joe. As a fellow firefighter, it was amazing hearing you guys discuss the issues we are facing in the fire service. In my opinion, the biggest hurdle we face in is NFPA themselves. They do not care, govern, or set legislation in place for us north of the border. You think dealing with ESA or building departments is bad? The fire industry is run and heavily influenced by insurance companies. It's all one big ass covering for everybody involved. Another big struggle we face is funding. Rural departments are sometimes disregarded because of our call volume. People need to keep in mind that the emergencies happen anywhere, everywhere. Thanks for what you do. Remember to yield to flashing green lights. And then I responded with total agreement. Like, I was like, it was great that Joe was bringing that up on that show when we were originally going to talk about plumbing. Mm-hmm. And then he responded back going, amazing, keep the episodes coming. I have a lot of hammering, drilling to do, and will keep me, I will bring a motion to council to retrofit stereos in our fire trucks so we can listen to TCL. So I appreciate him saying that, which was great. It was Matt from Wetness Protection. And I like stirring the pot that way, as a way you and I have had a lot of conversations, mm-hmm. that you get a lot of jokers, in my opinion, looking at financial possibilities by coming into this sector.
Yes.
It's not... the way we were talking about, he brought up that whole point about that one instructor in the school system regarding plumbing who didn't really give a shit and he had no purpose being there. And then he ended up in that show. a fellow student started teaching more shit than the instructor was teaching. And I was like, I call him the orange apron. Like, you know, Kai, I'm not dismissing Home Depot or anything like that, but I'm just saying that a lot of tradespeople would just hang up their fucking tool belt to go and put on an orange apron to phone it in.
Right.
To phone it in. So you get a lot of people coming into this industry, they look at it like, you know what? I could probably make money off of this. I can try to figure out how I could sell the idea of me contributing to the industry and I can make money from it. And that shouldn't be on the forefront. It should really about how do I get kids or people that want a career change into this industry, wanting to be a part of this industry. And how do I break down these gatekeeping politician idiots that only care about here's more funding for more trades to get into the industry.
Yeah.
You can keep on throwing money into a hole and it's just going to get buried or it's going to be stolen or taken away or pocketed. It's not going to be beneficial to what the source is supposed to be benefiting.
Yeah, exactly. And you're seeing it like on the public side, you're seeing it on the private side too. Like a lot of, I can't tell you how many ads I see, even just like for business consulting or just business things in general. And all these, and we've talked about this, like nonsensical pitch campaigns. Oh, in 30 days, 60 days, you're going to be able to do X with your company and just, you know, sit back on a beach sipping tequila.
It's bullshit.
The sad thing is people fall for this.
It's a generation of we need it now, right? So, yeah. So that's what the politicians are doing.
They're capitalizing on this.
They've got 4 years to keep their job.
Yep.
So the moment that they started their job is the moment that they started figuring out, how do I keep my job?
Right.
But that's not the purpose.
That's not the mentality.
You should be thinking about, okay, so show me exactly where all this funding is going. Let me see the cause and effect of putting this funding into a source. Right. And I see these numbers and it's unfortunate because they're taxpayers' numbers.
Right.
So it's like you try to justify. And then in the same respect, you get some really good conscious Canadians talking about how we're overtaxed to the death. Like we're one of the highest tax countries in the entire world. This is just ridiculous where all of our tax dollars are going. And I see it because there's opportunity to be abused.
Right.
It's as simple as that. So that's what I was saying, is I was bringing up those jokers because they see an opportunity to abuse the construction industry.
Yeah. And you see it at different levels too. You see it at the education level. You see it at, I'm not saying like specific institutions. I mean, that area, you see the one-offs, but the things, they don't last, right? Like it's a very short-term piece, because once they realize that they can't capitalize right away, then they back right out. Then they shift focus.
But there's no accountability on top of that as well too. So like you go in knowing that this is not going to work.
Right.
You've convinced, because you're able to convince people to get funding for this idea of yours. Yep. Then you implement the idea and we already know that it's not working, but now we show
continue.
It. And so all of a sudden you cancel that program or you try to repackage it and put a different bow on it.
Yes, yes.
And then you get it in on the next term for the politician. And it's still the same.
Stuff.
It still smells the same, still acts the same. It ain't going to do anything for you. So, and then the people that are actually doing some good, i.e. yourself,
they're not getting that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely a more of a struggle for sure. I mean, yeah, would have liked it if it was a bit easier, 100%, but it does kind of keep me more motivated in the sense that I know that what the challenges are, and still just keeps me going. But it just means you just have to look into other options. You have to look into different methods of, I guess, accomplishing what you want to accomplish, right? So
you're frustrated by the community. Like, I know you've been to so many community get-togethers.
Yeah.
Because on the very first show that you were on, we were talking about this. Like, you're going after the parents. You're going after the communities.
Yes, yes, yes.
You're trying to change the mindset that whether they're doing it consciously or not, mm-hmm. they're convincing kids to not get into construction.
To not get into it, exactly. And like I said, that comment of, well, I don't want, what options are there besides construction? Automatically, like without saying anything beyond that, I already knew where that conversation was going. But I said, listen, so your son, like he's had experience in a specialized program. He enjoys this part. He enjoys the framing, the interior finish.
Yeah.
And all the things I'm seeing in his profile indicate that these three trades, one of them being carpentry, would be a good option for him. There are other ones that came up on there too that I talked to him about, but I'm kind of going like, why are we standing in his way? Like but even beyond that point, in his situation, after he left that program, he was left with very little guidance. Like it was very surprising. An individual that had been through the system, specialized system, and got the credits and the experience and all that, is now out of it, graduated, and is now going, okay, well, what do I do with this? What are my next steps? That should never happen.
When there aren't any signs to show them where the next steps are,
this is what to do.
They're going to leave.
And that's what it
and
is.
And I see it. Yeah. That's why I've constantly been chirping on this show. I don't care about how many coming in. I care about how many are leaving.
Right.
And I need to know why they're leaving. So if they're leaving because exactly for the reasons you just brought up right now, then that's the problem.
Right. And the other one too is like the other stigmas attached to it. Like, oh, well, you know, when he was working whatever job it was in the field, for example, there are a lot of individuals who were unfortunately not saying the best examples with respects to substance abuse and so on, which I understand and get that, but that's not a specific issue just to the trades industry.
It's not a reflection of the entire industry.
No, it's not, but it's like, I saw it in different industries, professional industries. I don't want to get the specific names, but it's not just an issue just solely to that industry only. It's all over the place. Yeah. So what are you supposed to say to that? I mean, that's where, you know, you as a parent, you as an individual, like you need to have your own moral compass in a way. You can't let individuals in a line of work influence your behaviors or to fall, you know, prey to that, right? So,
going back like 100 years or even a little less than 100 years ago, when you had such a surge of immigrants coming to the countries, coming to the West to build the infrastructure. And sure, all the immigrants gravitated towards construction jobs because there was so many structures to be built. There was there was so much infrastructure after each war as there is. And did you not think that, okay, you're an immigrant, you're coming in, you're doing work, but the family associated with that immigrant, weren't they proud that they were a part of that building that was erected? Like, weren't they proud of the fact that they learned the skills to create that structure? And so it became a viable option at that point. Right. But today you're fighting against completely a different list of career options that they still demonize, for lack of a better word, construction, where they still put construction at the very bottom of gratifying occupations.
It's second, third option for sure.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, like in addition to what you're saying, to have that, yeah, the gratification, like knowing that you took part in a massive project, it's also knowing that you contributed to the family and to their survival, because coming to a country is extremely scary. Like I know my dad, when he first came to the country, he had some electrical training in Italy, came and worked construction right away, then got to chef school. But for him, it was survival. Like I need to get my feet off the ground here. Like I'm just grateful to be here. I have the opportunity ahead of me. It's not easy, obviously, but, and that's the other thing too. We don't see what pathways, like, okay, for example, like you get into whatever trade it's going to be, like that is, it doesn't have to be just that for X amount of years. It could be a stepping stone to something else, which is much greater than what your entry point is. So you look at, okay, like even what I did, like I know what I did, and we talked about this in the pool industry. The pool industry is another good one I talk to a lot of people about, especially individuals that might not have certain educational requirements, like in the homeschool community. Pool industry is amazing because of the opportunities, and the fact is there are less barriers to entry.
Yep.
And you have amazing individuals, and you have amazing companies, manufacturers that have awesome training programs that they're built for you to succeed in installing and repairing the product. So it works both ways in that sense. But that industry is, when I entered that industry, it was kind of seen as, you're going to do what? Like you're working, like it was, like I mentioned, it just a second class option. But fast forward however many years, and what I was able to turn that into an opportunity where you were able to build a company and sell it to somebody. You can't do that with just a desk job. You can't do that with, you know what I mean? Like it's not.
But no programs are ever educating the people getting, the people that they want to get into the construction industry. They're not letting them know that that's a possibility. Like you can build this company to a point where someone will be interested in purchasing it.
Yes.
And then you can move on to another industry, whether it's relevant to construction or not, right, or something else that you want to tackle. We're human beings. We always want to thrive to do something else.
And that's it. You want to climb a different mountain.
Yeah.
Right. So that's where I was at too. When I saw how things were going and how passionate I was about it and really enjoyed it, that was what I got to. And just the timing just worked. So, but that's right. But having to do something like that, I mean, how many companies can't sell or haven't been able to be sold, for example, because certain things weren't in place for that to happen, right?
Well, like, they never planned it. They never started. You have to start it from the beginning.
Exactly. And that's the mindset built to sell.
But you got people coming up to you saying, I want that trade because it's the most money that I can make in the next 6 months, a year, 2 years, 5 years, or whatever it is.
Yeah, but they might hate it so much that in those 2-3 years, they're going to jump ship and do something else.
Why not love it and then contribute to change it?
Of course. And then in turn, the money, if that is whatever it is, like that'll come in time, but it's a more long-term sustainable approach than just a short term. Like, look at even pool industry during COVID, how many Yahoos came out and started building pools, putting shells in, and were digging pools that are now no longer around because it was just a money play.
Yeah.
Right. And you saw it in
they the knew pool. People were going to pay.
Exactly. And then you saw it in the work. You saw the quality of work. And unfortunately, they had to call us quite a bit because it wasn't being done properly. So, or different reasons, not just that. I'm not going to just slam them on that, but.
But it happened to the construction industry. Everyone just jumped right in because we were labeled essential.
Yes.
So then there was opportunity there. So you had monkeys come in going, listen, I could charge this and people are going to pay it.
Yeah, because
people. I'm a great salesperson. I could totally sell this idea and we do it. Will the work be proper? Like the definition of it is, I wasn't laughing 2 weeks ago when it was, we had that flood happen and in Toronto area because, you know, and going back to the government, you got a lot of money that was spent on projects that were supposed to be done. They weren't done. Money was taken. Money was deposited, but the work wasn't performed correctly.
Right.
And now you've got an infrastructure that is failing. And so you had a lot of homeowners with basements flooded. And even the last guest I was just in here, he was telling me about how, he actually, because we were talking about trim carpentry and MDF and brand new house being built and all the waters in there, some pump didn't turn on and flood. Yep. So, and that's a current build going on. So all of a sudden, like, I loved it because guess what? A lot of people that were not working, struggling, having to try and find deals, a lot of insurance calls.
Yep.
That's it. Phone calls are now happening. So you're getting some work, which was absolutely great in that respect, right? But you had a lot of damage happen. And I think there should be a lot more accountability. So I think that if politicians or anybody that wants to get into the space of helping an industry, specifically talking construction, there should be an overwatch. There should be somebody outside of that looking at it going, well, show me the cause and effect. Okay, 1.2 million. Billion, whatever it is, well, these days is 1.2 billion, going in to attract people to come into this industry.
What's it doing? What's
it really doing? There's a program that reached out to me that wanted to come on the show, and I rejected it because when I looked at the numbers, we talked about it. When we looked at the numbers, over 9 years, they received $9 million from government funding from different sources, and they supposedly have trained 700 and so people. And the question I asked them over and over is how many of those people are still in construction?
And they didn't give you a number.
Well, they gave me, they said over 80% are still in construction. And I'm like, you're full of shit. I'm sorry, but you're full of shit. Because even if I took an active construction force right now, that people I know,
right.
You know, it would be challenging to get to that 80% mark. It would be very challenging. And there's no government funding attached to that, right? And so when I did dig into it deeper and I started finding out, like, okay, give me the best example of the person that's gone through this program. Well, you know, African, lesbian, immigrant, and she's currently working for the TTC. It makes no sense to me. So she was government funded for the construction industry, but now she's working for the TTC. Not even on the construction side of the TTC, which right. I know a few guys that are doing that. Yeah. And they love it because triple time comes every day.
Right.
You're sitting around doing nothing and they tell me exactly how many hour per work schedule they work, but they're paid for 10 plus, if not further. And I'm like, you guys are abusing. Doesn't matter. Shut up, Manny, because the money's there.
Right.
So I'm like, yeah, but I'd rather have the money being done for a purpose. So I rejected that because I was like, I don't want to talk about that. That makes no sense to me. That's not success in my eyes.
Right. And then the fact that that's what's being kind of posted as their, I guess, their golden situation is...
This is what we're looking out for achieving.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's what you're looking out for achieving?
Problematic. And I got to tip my hat off to you. I mean, that just shows like, and that's obviously why we get along. Like, I really respect your integrity. And you're not just here to have anybody on the show that's just going to just shoot the shit with you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're here to have people that are going to provide value type of thing. So yeah, I know it's kind of funny. Yeah, looking at the whole government funding thing, we've had that conversation too. That is amazing of itself. That just, like we said, like it just gets to the point where it's like, oh, okay.
It's a shell game.
Yeah. Like it's just a face validity exercise. I mean, you then have to kind of get to the point where you have to modify your MO to fit what they're willing to shell money out for. And it's just, yeah. Then that becomes like a question of whether or not that's really within your realm and whether you want to accept that into your realm. So it's like,
it's interesting. Eh? Yeah. I just said it's a shell game, but it's like a corporate shell game.
It is. No, it totally is. And the people that
tend different to, corporations.
Yeah. Like, and it's one, but then in the end, as we saw, one benefits the other. So,
and then that's
it's not helping small, medium enterprise.
It's scary. Sometimes the more I get sucked into certain meetings and conversations of people. And a lot of the times I'm having conversations and in the back of my head, I'm thinking, I wish this was being recorded. But second would be like, something might happen to me if it is recorded and aired.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like they'll never allow it to be aired because they don't want people discussing these things openly. Right. And I'm like, don't be, you know, like to recently find out that the Gardner was built 6 inches narrower originally, but it was still built for the amount of concrete that was poured 6 inches wider. But 6 inches of concrete never showed up on that site.
So
where did it go?
Yeah.
But it was built. That's construction.
Right.
In the greater Toronto area or probably most of Canada. So don't rock the boat, man, any kind of mentality. Like, listen, we're making money. Shut up.
Yeah, you don't want to end up like the Boeing guy.
You don't want to, like, and that's the unfortunate thing. Yeah, you get people knocking on the doors of government saying, we need more people. This is going to solve the housing problem. I'm like, you don't.
Math does not up.
You don't build the space shuttle before you build the space station. You build the space station first, and then you build the space shuttle. Then you fill up the space shuttle to get to the space station.
Right.
But everyone's building it cart before the horse bullshit.
Yeah. It's just what sounds good at the time. I mean, like, you know, like I look at, I get the school level, for example. Like, I mean, there could be so much done there. Like, I think to support all the amazing individuals that are doing what they can there.
Schools are a fine line too. Like, I've had plenty of conversations with trying to get teachers from schools where it becomes like almost talking to lawyers.
Right.
We have to be careful on how we present things, how we say things, how we do things. And I was like, can we talk about educating people about construction?
Right. Yeah, no, it's tricky, and like it's so tough because I tend to see a lot of disconnect between whomever it is I'm speaking to, and it's so tough. Like, I mean, why I like that's what I said. Like, all this stuff, as frustrating as it is, it just means the approach and the strategy's got to change. So, going direct has always been my piece because that's where I think that's where I find myself most effective. I'm not going through a different channel as much as I possibly can. I mean, sometimes those channels are valuable, but like, you know, you're seeing people, like, it's all about the experience and the perspective that's being able to be given to certain individuals, right? Like, so say these kids, for example, like something simple, like his one particular individual, like he's vying for apprenticeship in electrical, I believe. And what had happened there was he'd gone through pre-apprenticeships and all that, and then he's saying he's applying this and that. And I look at his resume because that was one of the first things I wanted to see. And I know electrical is a tricky one. I know a lot of individuals had hard time getting placements and all that, like a lot of competition there.
Yeah.
But I mean, I look at the resume and it wasn't doing him any favors. And this had been through the school system. This has been through an agency. And I'm looking at this going, okay, there's a three-year employment gap, one. And then there are other things that came up there too, that just as an employer myself, and I'm looking at
some question.
Yeah, 100%. And if you don't have an answer to that, there's going to be a big issue with that. I mean, that red flag goes off right away for me. So I say,
did you ask him what the 3-year gap was about?
I did. So I think what happened there was he took some time off for himself. There was an injury issue as well. And then one of them was he got fired from a job. So, okay, fine. I respect that, but that needs to get accounted for somehow. Like, you have to be, I mean, don't lie about it, but like, you have to obviously be mindful that that's something that they're looking at. That's the first thing that they're going to see. It would be to me. I mean, I looked at it right away and I said, this is, there's something up here.
Did he give you a reason for the termination?
He did not. No, I didn't want to probe into that too much. I didn't want to probe into that too much. Just out of respect for him. For me, it was about, okay, fine. I respect that. I mean, things do happen. I mean, whether it's your fault or fault, I mean, at that point it's irrelevant, but at the same time, it's just, you know, something like that. And I said, has this ever been brought to anybody? Has anybody brought this to your attention? Right. For example,
nobody brought it up.
Never came up. That flags right away for me. Seeing somebody job hopping, like say seven, like, I mean, I had one particular individual that I hired and I did this. It was a risk. I took the risk and you full well with what it was and job hopped 6-7 jobs in like 2-3 years. I took them on and yeah, that didn't last.
Construction jobs?
Not construction specific. I mean, some general labor work and some other, like, I guess, handiwork, call it that. But, yeah, so that was, I mean, I did that at the time because we were kind of short and we needed people for how busy it was. So that didn't work out. But I know that experience, I'm using that experience when I'm looking at these coming across my desk and giving people the advice and the counseling and so on. all these other things that that can come up. But it takes somebody from the perspective of an employer to be able to say, this is why I wouldn't hire you. This is what I would fix.
It takes somebody who actually wants to pay attention.
Right. And who likes doing it.
Yeah.
Right, and who likes giving that value to people.
Like you got to at least give the time and effort. Recently, I've had more than my share of people reach out to me, and I encourage more and more people to reach out to me. And all I'm going to do is facilitate it. That's all I'm going to do. So it's like, listen, I had a plumber reach out to me, and I had an HVAC guy reach out to me. And I was just like, listen, I'm going to put you in touch. I'm going to reach out to all the plumbers I know through the show or in general in construction industry. And that's exactly what I did. As expected, the most of them were saying, I can't take anybody on right now. I've already got one apprentice. Maybe if things kind of change a little bit, I might bring on somebody else. I got to see how it goes. But half of them did say, you know what? Forward me his resume. Ask him to reach out to me either through a DM or here's my number and just do that. And so then all I did was cut and paste, and I just forward all the information to him, to both of them. And I go, guys, here you go. This is the best that I can do. I'm not vouching for you. I'm just kind of making a connection. Mm-hmm. But you being young and new into this industry, this is possibly an opening and you might want to reach out and put your best foot forward and just speak to them and be honest about it. Just be very, very truthful about it. He was very truthful in his message about his experience and what he wants to do and where he wants to go ideally. And he's more than willing to travel 60K either way. And I'm like, okay, great. These are all good. It's a pieces that we want to hear and then go from there. And you never know, maybe out of the 20 or so people that I try to connect it with, it might be one or two opportunities there for him to give it a try.
Sure. Why not? I mean, like, honestly, it's all you need is just that one person, right? Like, it's, you're not going to get 100%, I guess. But there, I mean, yeah.
There's a scary thought right now with this generation right now, because I think the government has done a little bit of good convincing a lot of people to get into trades.
Yeah, they have.
But they've done a shitload of bad about now where do they go after they start the process. They're just like, here, you're on the island now. Fend for yourself. We got you on the island.
And then the other thing, too, is they're making it seem like, oh, there's such a shortage. Oh, my God, all these. And yeah, okay, fine. That is the case. But they're also painting this picture that if you show up just having a pulse that you're going to get a job, you still have to put your best foot forward. You still have to take your best shot. You have to make sure everything is 100% in line with, obviously, resume, presentation, even how you approach and so on and so forth, and market yourself and network, all these different things that need to be taken very seriously. It's not like you're just going to show up, hi, I need a job. Oh, here you go, $100,000 salary. Like, there is a bit of that that's in play. Like, I think there is a bit of that mentality. People coming to me saying, I've tried a couple of different places, and I always ask, well, how many? Five. Okay, well, keep on going.
Yeah.
Right? This mentality that they're just going to get a job just because there's this shortage and they're not going to have to apply themselves. So
there's a shortage of work.
Yeah, exactly. Right now, a lot of industries are really slow.
There's a shortage of work. Yeah,
people are really slow.
If I was a new person getting into construction right now and I was doing pre-apprentice, or I was just getting my foot in, or I was trying to figure out where my direction is supposed to be headed towards, I'd be looking at what the stream of salmon is doing, and I'd be looking at trying to do something better than that. Yeah. So if you've got dozens and dozens of pre-apprentice people that have gone through government-funded programs, they're all sending out emails or sending out DMs to people,
right,
then I would be like, find out where their current job site is, go through their social media feed and try to piece together where they're working. Try to look for their trucks, their vans, their workers, signage, try to find the signage of job sites for them and get on that job site, walk on that job site, introduce yourself, leave a positive impression of yourself. That will stand apart from the rest of the people that are just sending out emails.
You see, the thing is, like, it's, to me, I look at that, and that's what I preach too. You got to get face to face. I mean, that's not going to work in every single industry, but in this industry, especially
in construction, it's huge. Yeah,
and I know
it leaves a mark. It'll leave a mark on me.
Oh, for sure. Like, you'll remember that person out of the 100 people that are applying. So there's that side of it, but that's like kind of like a bit of that networking entrepreneurial mindset, like that go-getter attitude, and that, like, F you attitude too, in the sense that, okay, you're going to say, no, okay, no problem. I'm going to go to the next guy, the next guy, the next guy, like Rocky Balboa.
But don't dismiss the person who just rejected you.
No.
Thank them for their time.
Maybe they know somebody.
Exactly.
Maybe they know somebody.
Just leave a positive impression. Yeah. And then even if you've had the balls to make cards or whatever, it's very cheap to do it nowadays, or even just a calling card online, digitally speaking, make sure they have it. Yep. Send it off to them. Email it to them. So just keep reminding them about it. Thank you for your time. I respect your time. I appreciate your work. I love the work that you do. Quality. Love to cross paths with you again one day. Maybe not this year, maybe not next year, but maybe we'll cross paths, okay?
Exactly.
That's going to leave a mark.
And 100%. I mean, sometimes what can happen is people then can talk to each other and say, hey, you know who this kid is.
I just had
and
a kid.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it's always funny how that human connection, human, like that aspect of it is so important.
That's old school construction.
It is. But it's still very much in play.
Yeah.
Still very much in play. I mean, yeah, it's kind of funny. The other week I was talking with somebody else and they're saying that that they were getting calls from wives calling for their husbands for jobs.
I could see that.
Yeah. It's he was just dying. He was like beside himself when he was telling me this. And I just said,
is it because the guy is not doing enough to look for work, or?
I guess that could be part of it. Yeah. I don't know the specifics into that, but cause like talking about parental involvement in the process, and he brought that up
because
lately as we know, like parents are very active in this front, right? Which is very detrimental. I mean, I know what the intention is and all that, and it's fantastic, but I always tell people, if you want to kill 99.9% of your chances of your son or daughter's possibility of getting hired somewhere, you cannot be seen anywhere like in the driver's seat of that bus. Like, you have to be, I mean, you could support from the sidelines, and by all means I respect the love and care, but you can't be there, like active in the interview even. Yeah, like it's tricky. Like, even talking to a VP at a career college not too long ago, he says, I don't even return calls to parents. Like, I don't even bother.
How
like
many parents are calling?
Quite a few. And he says, listen, like, your son is 22 years old. Like, he needs to take ownership here. Like, this can't be you stepping
in. I've had kids on the show that were in their teenage years that were door knocking in their neighborhood. That's where they started to mow grass, just to do anything.
Yes. So, well, the good news is that for the individuals with that initiative, the sea is wide open for you.
Here's a bigger problem. I've had this happen to me a few times. I've had people reach out to me, you know, because they think I'm a sort of, you know, like influencer or something like that. I have some pull, some weight or whatever. All I can do, like I said, is I introduce people. That's all I do. Yeah. And so then I get reached out going, listen, my boyfriend or my soon-to-be fiancé, husband or whatever, is new to Canada. He's really good with his hands. He's interested in getting in this trade. Wondering if you have time to speak with him to get a sense of how to go about this and all this other crap, right? I'm like, sure, let's book a time. So I'll book a time and I'll give up my time and I'll have a legitimate conversation with this individual and I'll give them what I know, because I know a little bit about all the trades, exactly the procedures associated with it. And I get a lot of the times, I didn't realize it was going to take like that long. I didn't realize it was that involved. I didn't realize.
Anything that's worth it is going to be.
I'm like, dude, I'm not inviting you to the operating room to open heart surgery.
Yeah.
Like, there's steps to get to that point where you can actually start doing the work that you need to get done to get paid the money that you're expecting.
Yes.
So it's like there's a disconnect on people educating these people the truth. This is what I have a problem with. Nobody wants to ever tell. I'm of a generation that I'd rather you pull the Band-Aid off and tell me the fucking truth on what's it all about.
Right.
And then I can make the assessment on what to do next.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you sugarcoat shit and just tell me you could be making six figures in 5 months, you're lying to that person.
Which is a lot of this marketing nonsense that we're seeing. And I hate to say it, but like, as much as we talked about, I think in the first episode that you and I did together, how there's obviously the mentality of the professional track being pushed and certain, I guess, careers are being glorified as the ones to go.
The money makers.
Exactly. We're seeing that here too in trades and construction, where it's, and that's why you have all these people come and say, oh, well, I want to be this, or I want my kid to be this. That's fantastic. I love the initiative. That's great. And you seem to have very good clarity, but what's the motivator? What is, like, why is this the track you want to pick? all the money, it's all this money. Emotion. Exactly. And it's like, hey, listen, like you and I both can speak to this. After a while, the money shit gets so old. Like it doesn't anchor you mentally. It doesn't anchor you emotionally.
You it's go the fulfillment that you should be going after.
Yeah. And it's like, how many, and I think that's part of the reason why we're probably seeing some people bowing out, because they get into it for the wrong reasons. I'm not painting with a wide brush, but I think it's part of it is being misguided and misdirected into getting into. So like other individuals will go, yeah, of course, we'll get you that information on how to do that right away. But it's no, we got to dig deep here. Like, what is driving this bus? And a lot of times the kids come to see me. I remember one Brampton career fair I did at a high school. Kids are great because they were coming up to me directly. I had a lot of interaction. I loved it. And I would have the honest conversations with them. I said, listen, you understand, like, yeah, money's great. And I was your age too. I wanted the shiny car, sports car, and all that wonderful stuff. But your priorities change when you get older and you're looking for different things. And the money really just loses its luster after a while. Like, it's about, like, wanting to get up and really enjoy what you're doing. If it means a pay cut at first or in general, people are willing to take that.
Yeah.
So, but that's where, like, there needs to be a deeper dive in the onset to understand, okay, so Manny here, okay, like really, really get to understand who you are, what you're all about, what your skills, abilities, interests are, to say, yeah, Manny, I think these three, you should look into these and really spend your time on this. And this is what you could do to move forward in this step, like a little bit more funneled guidance, because even in a local high school, they couldn't even find, I mean, mind you, it was a bit of Christmas shopping on the 23rd of December kind of idea, because a bunch of them had no placements. They all wanted the same placement. And a few of them came to me directly for help in finding the placement. And I just said to them, hey, what's going on here? And then we do a deeper dive and realize, well, truth, this trade is not really the one I think is best suited for you, after kind of doing the initial assessment analysis and all that. And I think more of that needs to be done. And I think some of the metrics out there are not really, they're not in depth. Like, if I had people say to me, oh, well, I do well in math and physics, should be an electrician. That's not,
you could be an engineer. You can be foundation. You could be a lot of trades.
So that, you see what I mean? Like, we were talking at the beginning, like the surface level stuff,
yeah,
like short-sighted stuff. Like I get
the sense that, cause you also come from the teaching background too. And I think we hinted at this a few times on a past shows, where I get the sense that when a kid wants to talk about construction and they're approaching a guidance counselor or some sort of teacher of influence to get them some more information about construction, I get the sense that that person isn't even paying attention or looking at that individual regarding construction options out there. But if they were approaching that guidance counselor or that teacher for a career in accounting, legal, or medical, or whatever, yeah, then they're going to be like, here, sit down, have a seat. Let's discuss this. I'm going to give you a good full hour. Yeah. But versus construction, you're going to get someone on a stamp and just like next person.
Yeah.
Next person. And I'm like, I think you need to sit down with these kids and go, okay, what do you know about construction? Like, what's your perspective of construction?
Yes.
I think there should be a series of questions about what they think construction's all about. We know what the stigmas are.
Exactly.
We know what, it's prepared, like portrayed in kind of just in society, but there's a lot more to construction than that, right? So do you know that? And that the teacher, the guidance counselor has to be versed in this shit.
Yeah.
And they're not, right?
Most are not. Like, I mean, I think they're doing a better job with that. But like, I think in the whole, it's lacking quite a bit there. And they're relying on outside sources to fill that gap in. And you and I talked about this a bit too. Like, coming into the school year, they're making this big push, grade 9, grade 10, career counseling, specialized career counseling. Sounds awesome. And like we said, what are we throwing money at? Who are the individuals that are providing that information? What background do they have? Do they have a construction background? Do they have a business background? If not, then you and I might as well start promoting the medical field it's the same thing. Like
do they still do career day in high school?
They do. And now there's more of a push. And actually I have something to say about that, because I'm involved in quite a few of them as an exhibitor or even on the committees. They do, and they've been doing a great job of incorporating trades and trades colleges and unions and companies in there. It's been great to see. However, though, I get a lot of parents and a lot of students coming to me and saying, like, oh my God, like, this is almost overwhelming. Like, it has the opposite effect. You come in here, you see 50 different booths, And you're just going like, okay, now
what do I do?
Yeah, it makes it worse in a sense. So that becomes the other side of it. On one side of it, it's amazing that it's happening, but then it kind of makes things cloudier in somebody's mind that isn't sure to begin with. So that's, and I'm the upcoming fair I'm part of, next meeting I have, I want to bring up a plan to help kind of mitigate that in a sense. But like, there's got to be more in the ways of like matchmaking, if you want to call it that. Like, hey, this is,
I joke about it, it's construction Tinder, simple as that.
There
you're,
you are.
You're just connecting people.
Exactly. And showing them the path and illuminating the path.
So, and not every tradesperson that you want to try to work for is going to be a perfect fit.
No.
We all have to get along. And anybody that's been in construction long enough, you have the ideal people that you do get along. You get on different levels, whether it's regarding you connect on the skill level, you connect on personalities, or you like it just, you connect as individuals. Mm-hmm. But you're also going to rub elbows with people who are going to hate the hell out of you. 100%. Welcome to the world. That's how it works.
But it's like that everywhere, though.
Yeah.
It's like that everywhere.
So don't get so offended by it. Like, I don't want anything to do with that industry because I was treated like shit that first week.
No, and that's the thing. I think that's part of it, too, is, I mean, we kind of localize all these things to specifically this industry only, but like having experience in other industries and so on, you hope, I mean, depending on the severity, like sometimes it gets really bad, as we know. Right. Like, I don't want to take that away from people, but at the same time, I don't want, like, you know, certain things to kind of paint a negative picture to some individuals in what could be a very fulfilling career for them and a very good opportunity for them type of thing. So yeah, there's that. But like, to me personally, like, that's why I like pushing the entrepreneurship, the business side of it. And when I'm talking to somebody,
that's really its true nature.
100%. Like, I love pushing that to individuals I feel would benefit from that. And will eventually, I mean, they're not going to get there right away, but individuals that in time will benefit and give a lot in that realm. And you kind of, in a way, you kind of negate a lot of the noise and a lot of BS that's out there. You're kind of running your own show. So I really like doing that and finding the gems out there that have the leadership skills and have the abilities and are the diamonds in a rough that would be kind of best suited for that. So that's part of like what I do too, because you don't want to, the other issue then becomes by not following a proper process and just saying, hey, yeah, you should become this. Well, what if that pathway doesn't allow for that individual to investigate an entrepreneurial route, or it's a harder one for them to get into, then you've completely handcuffed that person. So not completely, but you're not doing them, you're doing them a disservice regardless. So
with TradeLinks, what's the objective with you here? That you're trying to make it easier for people to navigate through this industry to get where they need to get to.
Yeah, so ultimately the first step is what I call Trade Explorer, which essentially is helping individuals determine what their best suited trade is.
Okay.
So it's a real in-depth piece where they're like, there's interviews, there's surveys, like I'm looking at report cards if they're available.
What,
like,
number is the money part of it in that questionnaire when you're talking to them?
It's like one question.
It's just one question, but it's not the first and ultimate question.
No, because I really try making
it can't be.
No, because my whole point is to look at the other pieces to it, right? So money's great, as we know, but like there's so much, as we talked about, that's beyond that point of it. And you know, money in any trade, depending on the situations, it can come in different routes, like if it's advancement or whatever the case is, like I've said. But no, money's not the focus. And if somebody comes to me specifically with that in mind, like I just want to make this much.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, here's my article that I posted on that. Here you are. But some of those trades are not the easiest to get into, right? It's very difficult. And unless you have the skill sets that make that happen, I mean, part of like what I hear some, I'm not going to say who specifically, they say, oh, you should become this because you can make $180,000 a year. You can do that. I'm thinking all this misinformation from people in key positions that is just, like I said, not really doing anybody any favors. But in the money aspect, I don't focus on. So I'll give you an example of an individual that I just recently worked with. So this is an individual on the spectrum, high functioning on the spectrum. I've worked with quite a few students who were, and ultimately, I have personal experience with that too, with individuals in my personal life. So this individual, I saw this with a couple of individuals I worked with. They need that routine. They need the predictability piece. They need to know like everything is, you know, very, very like nothing out of the ordinary. Everything's got to be in a box. Once you kind of take things out of that routine, that's when it becomes extremely difficult for those individuals to work in. And on top of that, this one particular individual had this knack for memorizing parts, like part codes and specific parts for fans, ventilation and stuff like that. Literally like hundreds of parts memorized, like just had that as one of their interests that they hyper-focus on, right? So we're looking at the different, and there's some physical limitations there too because of an injury that happened in years back. So one of the things that came up was a parts technician, a parts person. That's one thing that came up. So you're kind of working in a predictable setting. It's very set to the hours that you're working, the environment you're working in. It's not you're going to different sites and you could be working this shift or that shift. It's very, I guess, set to, I guess, those preferences and situations. That's one thing that came up for that individual. So, and like, yeah, when they talked about how that was one of the more recent, I guess, interests that they had, it was obviously it's a hyper-focus thing that's just part of the
condition. What did they start with when they approached you? What was on their mind at the beginning?
There was like, listen, we don't know what the heck to do. Like it was, and they thought that the ASD and all that was going to be a major hindrance to, but I said, listen, everybody has gifts and talents. You have to kind of shine a light on that and find where that is going to be best suited in type of thing. So in that instance, it was, we don't know what to do. So that was one thing that came up. So I qualify all trades with 50 different qualifiers. And I go, obviously, in that instance, there was absolutely zero interest in entrepreneurship, no interest in a business or leadership or anything. It was just wanting to get a decent job. And that's a Red Seal trade, by the way, too, which is neat. So just finding something that would fit the profile.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So they just felt that, yeah. Anyway, so that's where that came in. And then the next step was obviously the resume and cover letter, all that stuff, and interview prep and all that kind of stuff. But that's an example of one individual. But others have come to me dead set, said, I want to get into electrical plumbing, and we're kind of dissecting things a bit
it's
more.
It's the HVAC. It's the top three. That's what they post. I get it. It's recession-proof, but technically speaking, all construction is recession proof. They can, it depends on how you position yourself, right?
Absolutely.
You just need to just make a few shifts to stay survivable.
Absolutely.
That's as simple as that, right? So people are going to spend money. You just need to just make these shifts.
Where? Yeah, exactly.
That's all it is, right? Do you think, like, where's the government getting their thought process? We know that it's all about just re-election, but outside of you, there's a lot of other versions of you that are doing good things. There's unfortunately more versions of you that are doing bad things because they're just motivated by the dollar. I mean, are they not paying attention to things that you're doing like this? Like they start looking at it going, that's a viable option there, or that's not
I see,
a big enough noise, like a drum. And
I've kind of been more like on the, this hasn't been, maybe close to 2 years now. I haven't had any real traction. I mean, I did have an email come in from the Ministry of Labor about a meeting of sorts. I don't know what that's gonna be about. That could just be a face validity exercise. I have no clue. So that's one thing.
How long ago was that?
A week, 2 weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, but now, now I'm more involved in these fairs. I'm more involved in the community. The group is growing. Got career colleges. Hey, unions? Hey, you want to come in? You want to have a tour? All that kind of stuff, which I'll gladly accept because it just means I have more information. I have more connections. I have more abilities to help individuals. I have companies reaching out, right, for different reasons, and also I consult with companies too. But yeah, I mean, I'm kind of just. My focus is direct on the people, like right in front of me. Like tonight, I'm gonna do a live and kind of speak to them about prioritizing what to look for in picking a trade, and just some side things too, like mentorship, more mentorship related, kind of talking about how to stay grounded, mentally grounded type of thing, and kind of use a personal example, obviously with the music being one of them for me. So just kind of like adding a bit of personal touch to that, but also industry specific information too, and see what comes out of that. Right. Some people I do find like I've done a lot of webinars and stuff like that where people have come direct, which I've had more success with. So
how are the unions these days? Because I mean, I've never been a huge fan of the unions, and I know that with the downturn in the economy, union members are staying home.
Yeah.
There isn't that much work going on. So I don't think right now they're looking at, we need to bring in more members, unless they are, because each member makes them money.
Of course. Well, I mean, if they have their set pre-apprenticeship programs or the cases, like that's not free. So, I mean, not the ones that I know of anyway. I do know that, yeah, lately it's been a struggle for them, but I do understand that they anticipate things to improve come September onwards. Supposedly they're claiming, especially one union in particular that I was talking to, a lot of permits and stuff are in the works and looking to get finalized things, or hopefully, you know, that's what I'm being told anyway. But I just find, I mean, I've obviously had quite a bit of interaction with some of them for some of these fairs, for example. There have been some of them have been fantastic, actually. Like, I mean, they've been very, like, arms open. Hey, listen, we want you to come take a look. They've been really good that way. And I get it. Like, I put my stuff aside with respect to what I think in terms of my own personal beliefs, yeah, because it could help somebody, for example, or it could be somebody's, I guess, whatever the case is. But I find, yeah, there are a few really good gems out there. Like, they've been really approachable, very communicative, and very into the community outreach aspect. Like, very, so okay, you have a fair, I'll be there, no problem. Where others, it's like, who the heck are you? It's kind of like you're bothering them. And yeah, I don't want to focus on the negative, but there have been a couple of individuals who are very community focused. So I really,
but are you like this. you're swimming in these waters where are these other people, are they funded somehow, some other sources? Because you're not funded.
No, I'm not. No,
right,
climate, yeah. It's no.
So is everybody volunteering their time there and their effort, or is it mixed bag?
If it's you know what, depending on what the agency is, like, yeah, like those individuals who are there are employees of that agency,
yeah,
or that union, for example.
Yeah.
So, or if the school board's putting that on, the teachers and the team and so on, they're obviously paid by the school board. There's money flowing from somewhere, type of thing, right? So,
like, Larry, what do you think if we continue down this path where politicians continue doing what they're doing, everybody that's just caring about the almighty dollar continues to do what they're doing,
yeah,
and then you keep on getting a bunch of new people trying to get in the construction industry, but then they're at a loss of where to go next.
They go somewhere else.
And they're going to go someplace else. And I don't think it's going to be someplace else in construction.
No.
I think it's just going to be another career option at that point. Because the truth of the matter is that it wasn't their money that they spent to get to this point. Mm-hmm. It was government funded, especially if they hit the DEI, you know, letters, and then they got that money through that process. So they look at it like, well, it was a free tool. And if I broke it, it didn't matter to me because it didn't cost me anything other than time.
Yeah.
I mean, what's going to be the face of the construction industry here in Canada, specifically in Ontario, 10 years out from here? Because everyone keeps on crying about whatever, 4 or 5 out and 1 being in, right? So at some point, that replenishment is going to go to 0.
But what's interesting is that there's some people I've spoken to, and these aren't just Joe Blow individuals, who don't even believe in this shortage. They're saying,
I don't believe in a shortage.
Yeah, yeah. They're just saying, like,
I believe in a shortage of permits and projects getting started.
Yeah.
I believe in that there's a lot of projects out there that have the funds to move forward, but they can't legally to move forward, start it because of the process.
Yeah.
And that's work for people that are waiting, whether you're union or not, they're waiting to work. And then that's most work that you can get more people getting. And if it's a private sector where it's like all this custom resi or whatever, you're getting small mom and pop construction companies that can bring these apprentices start getting them working.
But they tend to be the ones that are very, I mean, not all of them, obviously. There's some that have been very, very arms open in terms of that. But they're the ones that tend to be like, you know, I've been burned before. Screw it. Like, I'm not doing this
in
again.
This economy, they can't take the risk to bring somebody on board that will, by history, make mistakes.
Yes, yes.
So if they make a mistake, then it's a financial burden on that small business owner, and they can't take that risk.
Yeah, and that offsets whatever grant that the government's going to give, $20,000 or whatever it is. Like, I had an individual who was said that, like, what they could do is, because obviously it was year end, they could give that $20,000 and then back it up after that year, which is a month out, with another $20,000. So you're with $40,000, and people weren't taking it still. It was
I wasn't surprised. I wasn't surprised that they weren't taking it, because it's just, you're leaving the baby on the doorstep here and you want me to raise it.
Right.
right? And I'm like, yeah, I'm a nice individual. I want to help out, but this is going to be a huge burden on my business, possibly.
Of course, and which I respect because it is all about. I mean, technically, I mean, I've had people come to me and say, well, we're not a school, so we're not here to, right? And some of the different things that are coming from the different, I guess, feeding sources for like some of the students and so on and so forth, like their mentality is not in line with that business. So
there's a lot of money being handed out.
Yeah,
like when I hear about, when I start diving deep into some of these and you start discovering, like I know Ford was recently, our premier was in Burlington talking about getting more trades in, and he's already committed to another, I don't know, I think it was 400 million more added to the existing, which capped it out at 1.2 billion now for this specific skills trades to get it in there. I don't know the details of what it, I'm pretty sure with the politics that are going on right now, DEI has something to do with it. So then you're going after a small segment of the population to get into construction when you should not be, and I've been saying this over and over, ignore the white people, so to speak, the people that are in the industry.
Anybody that just wants to get in, period, on a story, right? Like, it's...
But these, all these are little amounts, like, so I'm just trying to figure out, you know, like that organization, 9 million over 9 years, 1.2 here, that's just the surface. So is the government doing this so then it doesn't hurt so much when you find out where someone has a calculator and they go,
what's your ROI on that?
And all of a sudden you guys have allocated something like $100 billion to get trades into this industry, and you've gotten a million trades into this industry over this period of time that you've been in power, and 100 have stayed in the industry.
Yeah, let's face it. Like, if we're running a business, if it doesn't work. If you brought that ROI statistic,
it doesn't work.
To a board of directors, they'd fire everybody immediately, wouldn't they?
It's almost like should be privatized. It should just, like, you guys don't do this anymore.
Right.
We do it now. And it can't be anybody that's already gotten government funding before. Why don't you try something different? Yes. Like, try individuals that are doing things that are actually working.
Right.
And then fund them to do shit. That's why I've screamed over and over about starting a mentorship program. But the mentors need to be compensated for the time that they're allocating to educate this next generation.
The key is that they themselves know the trenches that these other individuals have to go through. And that,
but the government doesn't want to let you, they don't want you to tell them that.
Right. But that perspective... To me, if I want to learn about plumbing, where the case is, I'm not going to ask somebody who has no experience in that industry that who's just read a couple of articles, textbook, where the case is. Like, I want to get it from the horse's mouth. When I was seeking mentorship for myself, I went to the source, to the industry pros, to the people that have been doing it for a long time. I'm not going to my family, my friends. I'm going to the source here. I'm not going to an agency. I mean, my situation is a bit different because it wasn't an apprenticeable trade to begin with. And there were really no education options, right? So I was I really had to be strategic in how I approached that, or else I would have been a fish out of water in that sense. But yeah, like, I always come down to, what are the qualifications of these individuals? What is the experience of these individuals? And how are they adding value? Are they adding value? And you and I both know what the answers to that, unfortunately. But I mean,
well, the value is in how many people get in and how many people stay. Those two numbers are never reflective in any conversation.
No,
it's always just about how many people got in.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like when the schools tout the university acceptance rates. Well,
how many dropped out?
How many drop out? How many switch programs? How many, what are they making post-grad X amount of years?
Never talk about
are
that.
Are they out of debt? Give us these statistics, and you won't get that. But it sounds nice, 99% or 90% or whatever it is percent got into the university of their first choice.
But going down the route of construction lying instead of construction truths is not doing the industry any good.
No, and then people will see through that. They're going to be faced with the truth at some point. And it's going to be the student who's not having any luck getting into whatever trade it is, or not getting a straight answer from whoever it is, or whomever it is, or whatever agency it is that's giving this information out. And then it's just like, so that's one of how many that are out of the picture, out of the equation, that could have been an excellent value
contributed to the industry.
Exactly. Or somebody that could have opened a business.
Yeah.
Or somebody could, right? I love the business side of things. I love pushing the business side of things because I just feel that is, one, it's incredibly empowering, like, on so many different levels. But when that is an option, you just are able to forge a different path in a sense. Like, you're able just to like cut out a lot of the crap. Like, yeah, you have to go through the initial stages. You have to go out for sure. But it's a little bit different knowing what option can be out there, what opportunities are out there when you're going through it and knowing, okay, maybe one day I can get to this point, instead of just going, okay, well, what the F am I doing here? Right, okay, I'm doing this garbage, you know, that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? Like, and then you have the opportunity to see what holes there are in the industry that you could potentially fill, literally and figuratively, in whatever industry that is, saying, okay, you know what, maybe I can do things differently. Or the company I'm working for, I like how they do X, Y, and Z, but I think if I were to do something myself in 5, 7, 10 years, or however, in 20 years,
I would try this.
I would try this instead.
That's but what you want.
Knowing that you have that as an option that you're working towards, and just a target and a goal that you, and it's not going to be for everybody, obviously. It just gives you that. It's just a different mindset. It's just a different motivation. It's just a different approach to it, in my opinion. So
100 years ago, you didn't need the government's permission to get a permit. 100 years ago, you didn't need so-called resume to get a day's work.
No.
You just needed to show up there and prove yourself and do the work and be willing to learn.
And you're evaluated
day
to day.
And you have value, as simple as that, yeah. Right? And now you're asked to come back the next day. I remember being as a kid and trying to get into the film business, and I was part of the union, and I arrive on a daily call, and I met these people for the very first time, and I hustled and I was learning. I didn't know everything. There's no way that you know everything,
no.
But I was definitely interested and eager to learn and to pick up as much as I can, to the point where it's like, I'm getting my employer saying, listen, man, you slow down a little bit. You're making us look bad.
Yeah.
The seasoned guys. Right. And then at the end of that day, come back tomorrow, Manny. At the end of that day, come back for the rest of the week. And then I was on that crew for about 4 years. Mm-hmm. I didn't show up with approvals or certifications or anything like that. I showed up with drive and interest to be a part of this industry. That's what I showed up with. And then I was invited in.
And there's so many ways that, like, even myself and, like, I tell other individuals, like, when they're hiring, like, certain things to look for and, like, how to look for them, like, the little tests to kind of see. Because, like, truthfully, even when I hired in, well, because I was even involved in another business too. I don't think we got into that. This was a long time ago, but that was a different story. But the idea is that, like, you have all these people in front of you. What are you looking for?
Yeah.
And experience, truthfully, depending on the position, I mean, even with the pool business, I didn't care for it. Right. But what I did care for was the follow through. I cared for the drive and the eagerness. So simple things like, okay. Like, I remember one individual that I brought on, incredibly intelligent kid and very motivated, eager to learn, always wanted to learn the technical aspects of, he became an engineer, mechanical engineer. He came in, I said, listen, well, I see you don't have any experience with swimming pools. You don't have any experience with leak detection. Mm. What kind of value are you going to add here? And the way he answered that question and how he brought in different skills, different transferable skills, and how he brought in, how he interacted or kind of acted, sorry, in a similar situation when he went in, not having that those requisite skills and experience, just blew me away. It wasn't just like, yeah.
He was prepared.
Oh yeah, he was ready to go. And, yeah. And that spoke volumes even throughout the entire time he worked for me. And then came time to, hey, can you send me a couple of references? Just, you know, simple, innocent.
Of course.
But to be honest, do I really care what those people have to say? Because I know you're not going to send me somebody who's going to say something bad about you.
Yeah.
Let's face it. I mean, I called them anyway, but I'm not putting a lot of weight on that. But I want to see what your follow through is. When are you going to send that to me? Are you going to forget? Do I have to remind you? So he, in particular, within 30 minutes, bing, in my email box. Another individual, days, somebody else didn't even bother sending it to me. Like, what does that say to you?
Yeah.
But you think all I'm doing is just asking you for a couple of
no.
But there's other things in addition to little things like this that you're
but
looking
paid
for.
Programs are not even doing that.
No.
They're not even getting into that kind of depth.
No, because they don't have that experience.
Well, because they haven't been boots on the ground.
They don't
understand the industry.
That's right.
But yet they're funding these programs for the industry.
But we're giving them textbook.
It's a conflict.
Check mark knowledge.
Yeah.
Well, this is what you they'll say this and say that and wear this. And like, there's got to be more fluid knowledge than that, in my opinion.
That's why I always said there's two different worlds here in construction. There's the real construction world. And then there's the world that people have learned how to abuse funding.
Yeah.
For the purpose of construction.
And you look at where that money typically goes to. I mean, like in most organizations, it goes to wages,
Yeah.
Goes to the individuals that are working there.
Yeah. Admin.
Yeah.
All bullshit. So it's just, it's the charity crap.
It is, yeah. Right? It's
where, like, how much of that money that's collected is going to actually the cause, right?
Exactly.
So it's no different here in construction with all this funding. How much is that actually going to the person?
No, but it's crazy. It's like, exactly. But what I don't see out there, and it's a pretty interesting gap, is, like, supports. And I mean, there are, but very surface level stuff from what I've seen is trades entrepreneurship type of situation. Like, so many individuals, they have the skills. They want to open up a business, or some that do, but they honestly they have no clue what to do from A to Z.
Well, the smart ones are paying attention to what other people are doing in other industries regarding the business side of things.
Yeah.
Right? Trying to figure out how they handled their growth and how they did things. Not construction related.
No.
Business related.
Business related, yes.
Right?
Yeah. And I always say to people, some people is like, oh, yeah, I want to do that right away. I said, oh, easy. You can learn the business stuff later, like get your boots on the ground, learn the trade, get all that stuff figured out. You worry about this stuff. Like, because obviously as you get older and whatever, you only have a certain amount of time, right? So I always say just, that stuff you can always learn after the fact, right? And even though mine was kind of like a baptism of fire in two different ways, but I just find that... yeah, the support there and like the guidance, like it is lacking there too. Just because it's hard to find the really good tradesperson and a really good business person. It's either you're one or the other. I tend to see.
I 100% agree with you on that. That's why I've always said that every tradesperson should be educating themselves on business.
Yes.
Get a better grasp of business.
Yeah.
Because it will only benefit your trade.
100%. And even just like certain protocol, like I had somebody at my house the other week. And very simple on the phone. Okay, so I'll be there Tuesday morning, 8 o'clock. It's going to be $120. Okay, no problem. Shows up an hour in. Here's the bill, and the bill was like six bills. And I'm like, I mean, had I known what like that, that's what it could have been. I mean, if you were going to change a part, you have to tell somebody. There has to be that transparency that that's what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Don't just change a part and stiff me the bill afterwards. Because what if I had five different repairs or three different pairs on this machine. And if you had told me it was going to cost me an extra $500, I would have said, no, I'm just getting a new machine. So certain things like that, for example, but even just like in customer intake, I find that just businesses in general in this field, they lack, I guess, the transparency and the honesty piece. You know what I mean? Like it's very, okay, yeah, be there Tuesday morning. It's going to be $800. You don't know what's included. You don't know. Like even I look at in my previous field, leak detection. Okay, so one guy's charging $500 for a leak detection. Somebody else is charging $400 for leak detection. Leak detection is not just leak detection. Like everybody has their different versions of it. But where's the price list? Where's the terms and conditions? Where's the scope of work that clearly outlines that to a customer so that they're not going, well, I thought you were going to do this. And then it becomes a he said, she said, a me versus you situation.
Yeah.
Like all these little things that become big issues when you compile them over time. So
what do you hope to achieve with Trade Links, man?
Well, I just hope to keep pushing the word. I really enjoy dealing with, I mean, when I say students, I mean, there've been graduates that have been dealing with homeschooled students in the school system, hoping to reach them more, put them on a better path to give them more insights and more, I guess, direction in that and helping people want to start their own businesses, continuing to do that, even though I've been dealing with existing operators as well. Painting company is a more recent company I've been dealing with. And just continue to expand that out. Like I do enjoy helping people kind of, it's kind of like in leak detection, being able to shine a light on something that,
yeah,
it's hard because, you know, sometimes it's hard to get friends and family to do it, or you need individuals who don't have the bias, don't have the, all, you know, the different baggage type of things that can be attached to it. You need somebody with an impartial view.
Yeah.
And that has a general scope and a good scope of all the things that are out there. So I'm hoping to continue the work and continue to grow things and make more partnerships with people that ultimately it's a symbiotic relationship type of situation. So talking with a couple of career colleges with individuals that are, like, say, for example, gas techs, HVAC techs, that they're doing a lot of sub work for, say, one big company.
Okay.
But they're kind of handcuffed to them and they want to find ways of being self-sufficient because, as you and I both know, like sometimes that type of setup is great in the beginning, but long term, it would be great to be in a situation where you can be more self-reliant on your own leads and all that kind of stuff. Because what's to say, like in a lot of situations, even in my own experience, some of the bigger companies, they pay you in 60, 90 days and you're running into cash flow issues. So it'd be nice to run into things where you can kind of more control over. So just continue to get the word out there and just work as hard as I can.
How many different cities have you been able to, I guess, speak and be a part of? Like, I know you're focusing mostly in the northern part of the core, right?
Yeah. So lately there's been more traction, Hamilton area, Orangeville.
Really?
A mono area, a bit in Toronto, quite a few people in the group from like talking like Oshawa area.
Even really?
Too. Yeah. Not so much Toronto, surprisingly. I would say, yeah, it would be the least.
Toronto's a shit show.
Yeah. In general. You and I talked about that too, but like Halton region, like pretty much all over Halton region.
Are the kids and the parents similar all across?
Different.
They're different.
Okay. Different. I kind of find, and I said this to a guidance counselor that invited me to a career fair to exhibit there a couple months back. And I said, I just found there for some reason, all the kids, they were just coming right to you. They were not scared whatsoever. They were not shy. They were very confident and just engaged with you.
This was Halton?
This was Brampton.
Brampton.
This was Brampton, yeah.
Okay.
High school in Brampton. I made sure to tell the staff that because I was very impressed with that. Right? Like I just find it's a different vibe there. Now, I mean, it could have been just,
who knows. What school? Do you remember what school?
Notre Dame.
Really?
Yeah.
I know of Notre Dame, yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly where that
was. So I was just there at St. Augustine. I was there, 2 months ago, whatever, doing a little bit of a guest speak there and for a classroom there, and it was interesting. Let's say it was interesting. The unfortunate thing is a teacher that has been on the show, he was telling me after we did the guest speak that he was leaving. And he was going to another school, and he's hoping to leave this in good hands with somebody there
because
he built it up, and now he's going to try to build it up in another school. Good. But he definitely still sees some challenges trying to build it because he's still up against the machine, which is the school board.
Yeah.
Right? There is a shop class there, and there is interest there, and he sees the potential in some of the kids that want to be in this industry. And it was very, it was interesting, but it's like how you said, like, there was two girls in the class. They both want to get into either architect and or designing. And then the rest of the males that were in the class, the majority of them were all about plumbing, electrical, and HVAC. And there was maybe a couple out of finished carpenter, maybe one that was concrete. There was no other trades that were mentioned out of this class of 20 or so students.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, so I get it that they're doing their own research. They're paying attention to where the money's at right now regarding where I start my construction career. Mm. And I think that they should do more research, but not online.
No,
I think they should reach out to tradespeople.
Yeah, reach out to professionals. You'd be surprised how many of them would be more than happy to talk.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's...
They'll give you the gist of what's really going on out there.
Yeah.
And I think in all fairness, these kids, we'll still call them kids, right? Because they're still career changers as well. Mm-hmm. These kids... they could easily reach out to every single trade out there, every segment of trade. So you can reach out, get the answers from real plumbers, electricians, and HVACs. But don't be afraid to, you know, like I had a conversation. I had lunch with DGR Concrete and we were talking and Jim was there as well too. And that's where the whole, the Gardner Expressway and a bunch of other interesting stories came up, legitimate stories. But we were talking about how, in the construction industry right now in concrete, you know, someone that has been in construction concrete for 5 years is making 200K, but they worked those 5 years. And also remember that's five summers, that's five winters.
Yeah. That's,
those are long days. That's when concrete arrives and then you've got to be on the go. It's not time for lunch break.
No.
And shit like that. So it's like, and they weren't small builds. They were intricate builds. There was challenging builds. Basements are getting deeper. Like there was, it was hard work. So you had individuals that are in their mid to late 20s now carrying a income rate bracket that much. That was earned.
It was, yeah. But see, the thing is, what we fail to sometimes, I guess, portray is the whole picture of that. You'll just see, okay, the TikTok video will show this is how much this individual makes.
Yeah.
But you don't realize the background. And like you mentioned, like working in those weather conditions, I've had people come to me directly and say, I don't want to work outside. I don't want to work in the blazing sun and the freezing cold. And again, respect that, but I said you can't have your cake and eat it too in some situations. Like it comes with it comes with its. I mean, you think I liked diving in 30, 40 degree water to do repairs? No, I didn't. No. But it came with a paycheck.
Yeah, it came with it, right? Oh, so I probably would be like, if the kids were speaking to me, I couldn't do what you're doing, right? Because I'd be too blunt. If the kids were speaking to me and they said, like, I don't want to work outside, I don't want to be in bad weather, I don't want to be like that. Okay. I'd be like, oh, so you want to be a politician? Okay, see you later. Goodbye. Like, you basically don't want to do nothing, right? Yeah. But that's not for construction.
No, it's... But that's like what you said. But when you talk to people one on one, you'll get the other side.
You'll get body language telling you more than what they're verbally telling you.
Yes.
And then you can reply correctly to them.
Of course.
Right? And be brutally honest with them. It's not that you're trying to be offended or offensive by it.
No.
You're being honest about it, right?
I mean, anything that is worth it, like even monitor, whatever the case is, it comes with its process and its trials and tribulations. Like it's
a challenging industry. I just don't want people that are trying to get into this industry to dismiss it as if it's just a job.
Right.
And I could take advantage of grant funding, loan funding, perks, whatever, opportunities just to be on someone else's dime to get some training that I could eventually just leave this industry. No, you can get those perks, use them, and then use them to the best of your ability to excel in this industry.
Because other industries and other professions, you don't have that ability to do that.
No, you don't.
So use it for what it's worth and take advantage of the amazing things that are out there.
I'm still surprised I know you've told this to some kids. There's no student debt associated with getting into the construction industry. The amount of tuition is fractional compared to other career options.
Absolutely.
And when you get into the workforce, yeah, you may not be making the six figures,
no,
but you are going to be making more than your age.
Absolutely. But that's the key, is like you're earning to learn. It's not a case where you're out there spending. I mean, what I've heard some people spend in post-secondary is insane.
It's insane.
And like that becomes, okay, well then once you graduate, what tends to be your salary range? Not that much different than what these apprentices are making. And then it becomes a point where if that individual in that apprenticeship situation from year one to whatever, however long it is, if they're smart with their money, that's the other thing too. I think a lot of individuals need to be educated into is like, yeah, great. You're making this money at a young age. Be smart with it.
Where do I do with it?
Yeah. Don't just start blowing it. Like, so I know one individual who's become a good friend of mine. He's a carpenter. He tells the apprentices that are under his wing, hey, you know what? Maybe consider, it must be nice. Yeah. You're making 50, 60 G's and you're in your early 20s or however old you are, but think about X, Y, and Z. So he's good with that. Like, I wish there were more people like him, but that's somebody that really cares about other people.
That's what's missing. That's missing from the education process too.
It is. Like, it should be.
All they ever taught us in school was how to write a check.
I didn't even get that.
I can't tell you the last time I wrote a check.
Yeah.
It's not applicable these days.
I think the one thing from what I remember was interest rates and calculating interest rates. Well, I can go on the computer and do that in 5 seconds. Like, how about telling me, variable versus fixed versus...
How about educating me? I'm a 25-year-old person who's making $55,000 working in construction. And how much of that $55,000 should I allocate into some sort of safe investment and opportunity? And how much should I be allocating towards a purchase, large-scale car, house, eventually, stuff like that? And at what point can I look at possibly getting a mortgage application done so then I can start getting into purchasing ownership of a property, right? Like, educate me on that.
All of that. Yeah, and that's the, yeah, like you see. Like,
I know small businesses are doing that now. Like, Dan Guest is doing it out of that. Aaron out of Expert, he's doing that. He's educating people of, like, where your funds can go and where your funds can grow.
Yes, yes.
That's what they're doing, which was unheard of in the construction industry a long time ago. Different times, though. You could have been making a wage in construction back in the 70s, about 30K or 40K, but you were contributing to a house that cost less than 100 grand.
Right.
So you knew that in 5 to 10 years at the max, even at 13 or 15 or 18% interest rate mortgage-wise, you knew that in a decade that house was paid off and now you're ready to start paying for the weddings, paying for all kinds of stuff, getting a cottage, second dwelling, all this other stuff. It's different. It's different times. I get it now. But the principles behind where that money is going or how you make that money grow are still there.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
But they're not being educated to the people.
No, it's not. I mean, and that's the thing. Like, yeah. I mean, I've had people come to me and kind of they're like people, some some, I guess, naysayers, if you want to call it that, are just like, you know, why the hell, like, what are you doing? Like kind of thing, like, you know, this stuff should be happening in the school system, should be happening. So yeah, it should be, but is it? Like, or something like with this, for example. I know there's some agencies out there too that try to tackle that to some degree, but for some reason it doesn't seem like they're getting the traction, as much traction as they should. And, you know, like it's the same type of thing. Like, once again, like new programming and new initiatives coming into this year. I think one of them was talking about financial literacy, if I'm not mistaken. And it's like, that's great, but what's covered in that, and what are they going to do with that? So it's kind of like...
When I look at financial literacy being taught by an organization, i.e. banks or governments, it's taught by the benefit of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Not benefit of you.
No.
So I think you should always look at financial literacy as a point of, how is it going to benefit me?
And you need somebody who's independent of that as much as possible to be able to, I know you have Johnny here quite a bit.
Yeah, tell you the truth about certain things that you can do.
Yeah, but the good thing is he's doing his thing, but like, it's kind of in a similar realm, like what we're talking about. Like, yeah. You're not really tied to, like, directly. Like your focus is the client. Your focus is not the bank or the government, right? So it's the impartiality piece of the biases and all that stuff. It's like I say to people, and that's my criminology training, always question everything. Question where this information is coming from, who's delivering it, and what benefit they have by delivering that. What's in it for them?
Yeah, there's two sides to everybody. Yeah. And you have to figure out who's benefiting, which side is benefiting greater.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And not to say that, like, yeah, there might be some key players in some of those agencies that might be doing an awesome job, but that some key players, it's not, you know, I want to say all of them are trash, but it's
difficult to say. Like, when I look at this landscape and I just, I keep seeing more of this funding being wasted.
Yeah.
When I can also see, ideal people doing good for the industry to try to grow it.
With that.
And then they're not being funded because they don't have the channels that are associated with the people that do have the channels. And I'm just like, this is a powder keg ready to explode. Mm-hmm. And I don't see it lasting much longer. But then it's like our government, it's going to change hands next year.
And then
what are we going to do? And I think the mindset is going to be just cut. So a lot of these programs are going to disappear.
Well, even at the school board level, the one that I deal with, my understanding is they're running a deficit, $20 million deficit. So yeah, they're already looking, okay, axe. Like, it's...
Wow.
This is just how, like, they have to be conscious of these numbers. And I don't think, I don't know what decision-making goes into, what gets cut and what's not, but they just trim wherever they can. So
they have to make their numbers, right?
Yeah.
But the problem is that they make their numbers to keep the people admin wise still working.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'm like, well, that makes no sense, man. If this program was started to develop more people to come into construction, why are we worried about the admin people keeping their jobs? Maybe we should be trying to figure out how to streamline this so we don't need 10 admin people. We need two admin people handling this. And guess what? They should be working 8 hours of the day, not pretending to work 6 hours of the day and then working 2 hours of the day, getting paid for 8 hours of the day. That's where the waste is coming in.
Yeah, because when you look at admin, the salaries on the admin side, well, you can easily fund two or three individuals with that salary alone. So,
see, that's where the waste is. But then you get these cycles where there's going to be a change in the guard. It's going to be cuts.
And then it's like...
But then now nobody's going to get into construction. Right, because they won't be taking advantage of programs that are not there anymore.
Yeah, so now
you're really going to have a problem at that point, because around that same time, permits will be approved and things will start coming forward. You'll have plenty of work. But then, you know what? Maybe it is the workforce that's there and weathered it. They keep on doing it and building it. But they're eventually going to retire. They're eventually going to get out. And I've said it over and over. The current generation in construction right now will not be leaving this industry in their 60s and 70s. Like, if you're 30 and 40 right now in construction, mm-hmm. there's no way in hell you're staying in construction to your 60s and 70s. There's no way.
I don't see that.
The ones that are right now, they're getting out 60s and 70s because they still need to work to fulfill their retirement needs. That's what they have to survive.
So you have the benefit. Yeah.
Because maybe they've given too much money to their offspring for them to buy their own homes. Maybe they overbought their homes, so then they've taken out of their own retirement packages mm-hmm. to sustain that. So now they have to continue working, which is not a good thing. It's not great. But I'm telling you right now, the current workforce that we have right now, they're not going to be gray hair tradespeople getting out in their 60s and 70s. They're going to get out a lot sooner.
No.
How they get out, they're going to try to figure out how to get out with money so then they can still survive.
Or to another avenue where there potentially could be more money and less output. I think that's the name of the game in a lot of situations, right? So, yeah, it's a different mentality, different situation.
But I'm just trying to be realistic. Like, yeah. I don't like how people say, oh, no, there's plenty of work. There's plenty of work, and we need more people.
Yeah,
but
you don't, yeah, and that's the thing. And then people are coming, they're confused. They're saying, well, if that's the case, why can't I get a job, or why can't I this? And, like,
there's a bunch of variables that you have to factor in.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this whole ratio thing, too. Like, yeah.
Well, that's a joke in itself. Like, it should go right back. If it was up to me, I'd be like 1 to 10. Like, I just don't like, let's get more and more people, right? Well, I'm being really ridiculous about 1 to 10.
Yeah, but
right now it's 1 to 1, which is just, that's ridiculous.
The existing, exactly. And that's, you know, I know Aaron has talked a lot about that too. But
I mean, I'm hoping that it probably will change next year to 1 to 2.
Yeah.
I think with the new government, they'll look at it like, well, I think they can handle 1 to 2.
They know the problems there. They know what other people are saying, but just tap into what other people are saying and do something with that.
I just always had a problem with people in suits that have never been on a job site telling the job sites what to do.
Yeah.
I have a problem with that. I won't respect it. I don't, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
Unless you can prove that you know what we're talking about, which none of them have. Like, none of them have. They just don't. Everyone has figured out how to make a shitload of money and then have their own financial security in the forefront.
Use the buzzwords.
And then use all those keywords and then got the hell out. But then you didn't really change. I've asked this question over and over, either through my post or on this show. Leave the construction industry better than you found it. Like, politicians don't leave the city, province, country better than they found it these days.
And you know, what's always interesting to see is, where do they go after their time?
They milk other cows.
They go to different corporate situations and what have you.
Yeah, speaking, events.
They're done with the whole trades piece or the boots on the ground.
But all the bad shit that I created, not my fault anymore. That's in the past.
I'm gonna hope
we have to focus on the future.
Yeah, I hope you're gonna forget that when the next guy comes in and does other things, right? So
people don't forget. Tradespeople don't forget.
No.
But it's unfortunate that right now there's a whole crop of people wanting to get into the construction industry, can't get into the construction industry, and they're going to be working elsewhere. They're going to find another industry, which is unfortunate because there's a lot of prospect there, and they could contribute to the construction industry. Like I've said it over and over, Canada could be a leader in construction, and we're not. Unfortunately, we're not.
Oh, you try to impact one person, one listener at a time, and like...
How many jobs can we create if we started digging back up again out west in Alberta and digging into the second largest oil reserve in the world? How many homes can you build in that whole area? How many things can you can't do that when you got a PM that's got a portfolio that's tied to Saudi oil. It's not in their best interest to start digging in your own backyard.
Yeah, not in his.
But the amount of people that we would create work for, jobs for, economy-wise. It's a lot.
And the ripple effect of that throughout the entire country, it's just it's insane.
Yeah. Anything else you want to share before we wrap it up?
No, I think that's pretty much it. Like, I mean, always good talking to you.
Yeah, no, it's always great talking. I mean, yeah, I like what you're doing. I like it ever since you started doing what you're doing. And it's just, it's an uphill battle. You know that. And then at the same time that you're battling, you're getting these jokers come alongside you going, hey, how the fuck are you doing it, Larry? You know, like, can I do it? Because I think I can make money off of this shit.
I just, the misrepresentation piece is what drives me nuts. Like in the sense of like, in 60 days we'll have, your feet will be in the air, your crews will run themselves, all that kind of nonsense.
For shit.
And just like calling play on, you know, selling people hopium basically, or just, you know.
Hopium?
Hopium. Hopium.
Is that your word?
No, it's not. I took it from somewhere else.
Hopium.
But like you're basically selling.
I know exactly what it is. Yeah.
Nonsense, right? But people bite on that, because it's all marketing stuff, right? And that's the other thing is some of these individuals, they don't want to market themselves better.
Well, there's more money going into PR firms than there are the cause.
Yeah, exactly. It's, I think just people need to be very, very wary, question pretty much everything that they can. That's how you'll get to the truth at some point. So.
Well, that's what construction does.
Yeah.
When we build things, we question. And then we get things erected. It's just things are built magically. You turn around, it's there.
Yeah. And what can we do better? Like moving forward. You don't want to be building the same way that you built 10 years ago, or hiring or training or anything of that nature, right? Like it's, you wouldn't last very long if that's the case. But
I would love to see in my lifetime a tunnel built from the 427 to the DVP underneath Toronto to bypass the core. I would love to see that project.
It'd be nice, but for that to be in,
I would love to see that, man. But I don't think it'll ever happen because of the costs associated with that. They haven't even opened up the LRT.
No, I don't think so. Even the Alon's method that I think what we was using in LA, that would take an insane amount of time. And then he has that underground boring company. Or
something. Yeah, he's doing what's it called? Not the core. What's it called? I can't remember, but Richard Branson's doing the same thing too.
Oh, is he really? I know he was.
He's doing one as well too. But he's going from LA to San Fran in an hour and something like that. So to alleviate the whole air traffic.
Yeah.
And I was like, it kind of makes sense. But Canada here is such a big country. And this is the most congested city in the world. Our traffic in the 401 is ridiculous. And I think that if you were to create a tunnel from the 427 to DVP, for everybody who doesn't want to get to the core, just want to bypass the city.
I think that would be, I guess, the way of the future is underground. You can't do anything above.
Right? Like I was just in Turkey and it was just all tunnels and I was fascinated by these tunnels. I was like, looking at these tunnels going, I know exactly how these were built. I don't know the specifics of it. I wouldn't start a tunneling business right now and start building tunnels, but I'm like, this makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Like you're forcing people to stay on a straight line to get it from point A to point B. That makes sense to me, man.
That's forward thinking.
Like, yeah.
It's not just, 4 or 5 years and see you later type of short-term nonsense.
We have bad winters here. We have bad weather in general. That's completely oblivious to this project.
Right.
Like you're underground and you can get a point B a lot easier and you can move the city a lot faster, which what creates jobs, which what creates infrastructure, which it makes a lot of sense, right?
Absolutely.
But you got to get rid of everybody who wants to be corrupt associated with it. Because like I said, you don't want to build something that's going to cost $100 billion and then 50 billion of that goes to pockets and then you build a half-assed version of it for 50 billion.
Yeah, and then by the end of it, the 100 billion ends up turning into 200 or 300.
Exactly. Well, that's the LRT right there.
Exactly. That's
the unfortunate thing, right? I'm telling you, lots of private residences were built along the same time as the LRT was built. It's just funny how that works, man.
Yeah, no kidding.
Larry Lagomba, tradelinksconsulting.ca. Find him on IG at tradelinksconsulting. Also his email, larry@tradelinksconsulting.ca, and his phone number 905-220-3097, man. Thanks. Always a pleasure to see you, bro.
Thank you very much.
I'm so glad that you notched it up a bit, and I want people to understand that that's the bar.
That's it. Yeah, you better be coming here with the orchestra next. Yeah.
That's the bar. Thanks, Larry. Well, that's it. We're out of here.